the changes that we're seeing are all around us. And as more and more people work on it, we're becoming more and more aware of the breadth of the impact of climate changing around the world, not just at mid to high latitudes in the northern hemisphere, but in the tropics and southern hemisphere as well.
Which is where the focus of your research is, right?
Primarily in the tropics, yes.
Mm-hmm. And it's not just the Arctic in trouble is what you're saying, because that's what gets the most attention, you know, the ice is melting and so on.
And polar bears, which everybody finds, you know, a poster child. The focus on the tropics is very recent and surprising in some ways because the magnitude of temperature change in the tropics is much less than at mid to high latitudes. So if the temperature change is small, has been small, then the projected temperature changes are also small for the tropics, it's sort of paradoxical to worry about them. You think you should focus your energies on mid to high latitudes. But our point is that tropical animals and plants are very specialized for temperature. So even a small change in temperature there could have a very big effect.
I think we think of them as being more adaptable, though, somehow.
Well, that's an open question, whether they can adapt. They have more generations per year, so there's more opportunities for evolutionary change. But the models that have been done so far suggest that the rate of change will be much faster than animals have the genetic capacity to adapt to that change. So they simply won't be able to keep pace with the rate of change.
You have an article titled, "Are Lizards Toast?" And that's my question. Are lizards toast?
The evidence is yes, many species are. That paper was a response to a major paper in Science magazine showing that in Mexico and in Europe, many populations that were known to have lizards 20, 30 years ago, if you go back to those same sites, the lizards are no longer there. So there are lots of local extinctions.
Have they relocated or they've just gone extinct?
They've gone extinct. In some cases, they've moved. But many of those populations, well-established, that they're locally extinct. Southern Europe, many of the areas where people have been studying lizards for years, they're just suddenly gone within the last decade.
And what are the factors that are leading to this because of climate change and the warming temperature? Is it affecting food supply, for example? Or?
It can affect food supply. There's not that much evidence on that, but it's certainly an expectation that that's going on. In the desert areas of California, it appears that two things are happening. One is that heat, the higher temperatures are causing direct physiological stress on the animals there. But people are also realizing now that the conditions are affecting the plants. The plants are starting to die. When plants die, then that's the lizards no longer have a source of insects food, and they lose shade. So the environment becomes hotter. If you take away the shade, now it's not only the air temperature is increasing, but there's more solar radiation. So they get this double whammy.
And that's with a small change in temperature.
Change in temperature. So what they're discovering is that many of these sites where the lizards have gone extinct, the plants are also suffering dieback. And so it's very likely that the loss of the lizards is partly due to the dieback of the plants, the loss of shade and the loss of food that's associated with those plants.
The next question is, why should we care about lizard disappearing? And I want to read a quote, which I think sums it up. This is the quote from an article you co-wrote. Because the tropics are the center of Earth's biodiversity and its chief engine of primary productivity, the relatively large effects of temperature change on the metabolism of tropical ectotherms may have profound local and global consequences.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Well, let's talk about what those profound consequences could be.
The tropics are the center of biodiversity. They are also where most of the primary productivity of the fixation of carbon into carbohydrates, trees and plants for food. That's the breadbasket of the world. The models currently suggest that by the end of this century, with very high probability, the average temperature in the tropics will be warmer than anything that has ever been experienced to date. Let me repeat that. The average temperature at the end of this century will be hotter than the highest temperature ever recorded in the tropics. That means it's a new world, that the organisms there will be facing temperatures that are warmer than anything they have ever recorded to date. I find that extremely scary, because high temperature is debilitating to both animals and plants. The tropics are where much of our food comes from. And if we lose those forests, we lose those sugarcane fields and coffee plantations. The consequences are just terrifying.
And losing the forest contributes to what is a vicious cycle of
absolutely.
More warming.
You take away a major buffer of climate. And if you walk outside on a hot day and get out, you're away from the shade, you're going to feel the effects of climate change much more dramatically than if you stay under the shade of a tree. You lose that shade and the source of food and shelter and structural places for the animals to hide. The consequences have to be really dire.
I talk to more and more climate change scientists, Dr. Huey, who are extremely alarmed. As you said, you find it extremely scary. Mm-hmm. They're truly alarmed.
I think for most of us, especially those of us who've been around for a long time and have seen changes at sites where we visited when we were graduate students or postdocs, when we go back to some of those same sites and see the changes, some occur for reasons other than climate change, but sometimes they are pretty clearly due to climate change, and you see a trend in one's lifetime that's really upsetting. Most biologists, field biologists, love the places that they visit and the organisms that are there, and to see them go extinct or be stressed is personally upsetting. It's a loss of a family member, mm-hmm. As well as an ecological disaster. So it's we see it both from a personal and emotional side, but also from a scientific side, and the two together make it even worse, I think.
The other trend I'm noticing, Dr. Huey, is that more and more scientists who've been content, so to speak, to have their research published in peer-reviewed journals mm-hmm. and so on, are now feeling more of an obligation to have a more public presentation of their research. Do you feel that?
Absolutely. It comes from several sources. One, National Science Foundation that funds much of our research expects us to do more outreach and inform the public what we're doing and what the implications are. That's part of it, but I think also many of us have come to realize that the crises are so dire that we have to share what we found. So I think many people, especially the younger scientists, are doing this. We had graduate students at the University of Washington decided they needed to learn how to communicate to the general audience, and they went to the dean and asked, can you give us some money so we can bring in outside speakers and have a course on how do you communicate with the public? That came from the graduate students, not the faculty. So I think the younger generation is very clued into this and are forcing their advisors to become more involved in getting outside the ivory tower and letting people know the implications of what we're finding.
Mm-hmm. You really have an obligation, I think, mm-hmm. given what you're finding.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And we've been given money by the public to do this research. Part of that is payback and explaining what the results are, especially when the results are such that they should inform policy. Decisions about environmental issues are not just driven by science. They're driven by economics and social factors as well. But the scientific information should be on the table, and the only way it's going to get there if the scientists themselves get involved with the public and the legislators to inform them, here is what we're finding, and bring that to the table. Mm-hmm. That is our obligation.
Some are doing that, kicking and screaming. It's not your natural habitat.
Indeed, and when I was a graduate student and postdoc and early assistant professor, it was considered bad form to do that. That was a waste of time. That's changed dramatically. I think now everyone finally realizes that we need to be involved.
I have been speaking with Professor Ray Huey, who teaches biology at the University of Washington and has done a lot of research on evolutionary physiology. Fascinating research, Dr. Huey, and a pleasure to speak with you about it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.